kids, I miss my wife. I wish I was at home in my living room right now. And poof, he was gone. Second man said, well, that's easy for me as well. I have a thriving business back at home. They need me. I actually miss being in my office. So I wish I was at my office at work right now. Poof, he was gone. Third man was left, looked at the genie, looked around at the island and said, I'm sure lonely on this island by myself. I wish my two friends were back here with me. And poof. Come on, that's funny. I wonder what you would do if you were in that particular situation. What is it that you would wish for if you could have one thing and one thing only? There's actually a story in the Old Testament that feels a bit like that. 2 Chronicles chapter 1, Solomon has become king. He has succeeded his father David. Solomon was made great in the eyes of the kingdom and the eyes of God. Chapter 1, Solomon is worshiping God in the tent of meeting. He has offered sacrifices. Verse 7 tells us that that night, as Solomon was offering worship to God, God appeared to him and said, ask for whatever you want me to give you. Can you imagine that offer? The God of everything, the God of all creation, the God that took nothing and made it something, says to you, ask me for whatever you want, and I will give it to you. Solomon answers God, verse 8. It says, you've shown great kindness to David, my father, and have made me king in his place. Now the Lord, your God, promised to my father David to be confirmed, for you have made me king over a people who are as numerous as the dust of the earth. Give me wisdom and knowledge that I may lead this people, for who is able to govern this great people of yours? He could have asked God for anything. He could have asked God for riches, for fame, for power, for control. Yet instead, he chooses to ask the God of everything for wisdom. And so God says to Solomon, verse 11, since your heart's desire is this, and you have not asked for wealth, riches, or honor, nor the death of your enemies, and since you have not asked for a long life, but for wisdom and knowledge to govern my people, over whom I have made you king, therefore, wisdom and knowledge shall be given to you. And I will also give you wealth, riches, and honor, such as no king who has been before you ever had, and none after you will have. Wisdom is this incredibly elusive thing. One of the most endangered species on the planet is a leopard called the Emu leopard. I've got a picture of this fella here on the screen. This animal lives near the border of Russia and China. They say there are only about 70 left in the wild. It is incredibly, incredibly rare to see. There are conservation efforts to save this animal that is quickly dwindling from existence. I would make the argument that wisdom is becoming the Emu leopard of society. And if we are not careful, wisdom will find itself on the endangered species list. When I speak of wisdom, I'm not speaking of intelligence. I believe that we are more informed today than any other time period in history, but I wonder, are we more wise? Wisdom is incredibly hard to describe, yet it is evidently clear when you meet someone who possesses it. And when someone possesses wisdom, it opens the door for so many other things, as Solomon discovered. If you continue reading Solomon's story, he becomes so wise, in fact, that people from all over the world seek his wisdom and his knowledge. And as a result, he begins to collect and catalog this wisdom into a book that we now call Proverbs. The beginning of this book, Proverbs chapter 1, verse 1, Solomon writes, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for gaining wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight, for receiving instruction in prudent behavior, for doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning. Let the discerning get guidance for understanding proverbs and parables and the sayings and the riddles of the wise. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Proverbs is an incredibly ancient book, yet it is filled with relevant wisdom for today. A proverb, many of which were written by King Solomon, is a saying that is generally considered to be true. Now, a proverb is not the same as a promise. And unfortunately, many treat proverbs as a promise, but that is not what they were designed to do. For instance, there is a proverb that says, train up a child in the way they shall go, and they will never depart. And yet I've talked to way too many Christian parents who feel guilty because they trained their child up in the way they should go, and yet they still departed. The problem is they treated the proverb like a promise and not like a saying of wisdom that is generally considered to be true. So what then does it mean to be wise? It's a question that is gaining traction in our society. In 2008, the Center for Cognitive Neuroscience at the University of Chicago launched a $2 million research program called Defining Wisdom. In conjunction with the John Templeton Foundation, they invited young neuroscientists, historians, theologians, and academics to submit grant proposals to answer the question, what is wisdom? Now, unfortunately, Fort Wilderness was not able to grant me a $2 million research grant to define and research wisdom for you. I've only been given about 40 minutes this morning, not 2 years, and so I'm going to keep it rather simple. In the Hebrew language, the word wisdom essentially means skill for living. Solomon begins his proverb by saying, gain wisdom and insight and instruction. Receive wisdom for prudent behavior, for doing what is right and just and fair. As you and I navigate the terrain of our lives, there are moments in which things do not go as planned. You ever have something not go according to plan? You know what I'm talking about? Anybody? There are moments in which we are not sure what to do. Sometimes we are confronted with opportunities. We're not sure that we should engage. We're confronted with challenges that we don't know how to navigate. There are moments in life when it seems like everything is shifting beneath our feet. There are moments of struggle, which we talked about yesterday, in which we struggle to make sense of life and wonder, how in the world did I get here? Our future is always unpredictable. There are no crystal balls. We also live in a time of rapid social and technological advancement that it is difficult to keep up. Kevin Kelly, who is the author of The Inevitable, wrote, we are morphing so fast that our ability to invent new things outpaces the rate at which we can civilize them. These days, it takes a decade after a technology appears to develop a social consensus on what it means and what etiquette we need to tame it. So how do we then develop skills for living as people of faith in a world that is filled with endless accessible information, unprecedented opportunity, a world that is filled with risk, competing ideologies, division, polarization, and cultural challenge? I wonder, will we, as people of faith, as followers of Christ, react to life as it comes, or will we respond with wisdom? It's incredible the things that our brain allows us to remember from our childhood. I have hundreds of memories that take me back as young as 2 years old. There's one memory that I have when I was a kid. I was maybe 7, 8, 9 years old. And I can vividly remember standing in the kitchen of our house in Lockport, New York. I remember I was holding a Walkman. Remember Walkmans? Not talking about a Discman, not talking about an MP3 player. I'm talking about tapes, cassette tapes. Now, if you start talking to me about 8-tracks, you're older than me, don't remember those. I'm talking about cassette tapes that you had to use a pencil to wind them back up if they came out. Had a Walkman in my hand, and something happened that made me really, really mad, and I can't remember what it was, but I do remember vividly taking the Walkman and throwing it against the wall. It hits the wall and shatters into a million pieces. And so now I'm angry, I don't get my way, and I'm down one Walkman that I could not afford to replace. There are so many people that live life just like that. Not with thoughtful, wise response, but with constant emotional reaction. The reaction may not be as violent as throwing something against the wall, but equally as damaging. I would also argue that the community of faith throughout history is notorious for reacting to culture and not leaning on the wisdom of the scriptures that we say we follow to respond to it appropriately. On Memorial Day weekend this last year, I had some family in town, and my daughter was working on a project for school. She had to build a rocket, and she needed white spray paint, which we did not have. And so she said to me, "Dad, will you go over to Home Depot and buy me some white spray paint?" And being the gracious, incredible, kind, and amazing dad that I am, I said, "Yes, daughter, of course I would go over to the Home Depot and get the spray paint that you need, even though you waited to the last minute to do the project. I'm happy to serve you in this way." So I got into my car, and I drove over to Home Depot in Menominee Falls, and I brought white spray paint. And on my way home, I'm driving through downtown Menominee Falls, which is a small Midwestern town that dot the landscapes. And I noticed there was a street festival because it was Memorial Weekend. And the road was blocked off, and there were people eating and drinking and having a good time. And so I slowed down just to take it in, had the windows open. And as I rolled up, I noticed there was a small group of people standing on the corner. They were holding signs, and there was someone on a microphone. And as I got closer, I realized these were Christian folks. And someone was standing on the street corner at this street festival yelling into the microphone, "You are all going to hell, you vile sinners," as these people are simply trying to enjoy the Memorial Day weekend. And I wish I could describe with accuracy how I felt in that moment, but the word that I'm going to choose to use this morning is the word embarrassed. I was embarrassed by what I saw, because what I witnessed was passion, but not wisdom. Being irritating is not being kind. Whenever the community of faith reacts to culture instead of responding with wisdom, it hurts the kingdom of God. The earliest expressions of Christianity, all the way back to the times of Jesus, always ministered to culture and never reacted to it. They did not protest or boycott or get vengeful, but healed and offered hope. So much so that the Apostle Paul writes to the Colossian church in Colossians chapter 4, verse 6, "Let your speech always, 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 always be gracious, seasoned with salt." Let your speech always be gracious. Eugene Peterson, the author of the Message translation of the Bible, once wrote, "Many people think that what's written in the Bible has mostly to do with getting people into heaven, getting right with God and saving their eternal soul. It does have to do with that, of course, but not mostly. It is equally concerned with living on this earth, living well, living in robust sanity. In our scriptures, heaven is not the primary concern, to which earth is a tag-along afterthought. On earth, as it is in heaven, is Jesus' prayer. Wisdom is the biblical term for this on earth, as it is in heaven, everyday living. Living skillfully in whatever actual conditions we find ourselves. So, if wisdom is skill for living, if wisdom is on earth, as it is in heaven, everyday living, how do I get it from a faith perspective. How do I develop it, and how do I create an environment in which it can grow? James, the brother of Jesus, writes to us in James chapter 1, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God for it, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. So I suppose asking God is the beginning of gaining wisdom. God, would you please give it to me? But I wonder, is it really that simple? Is there a little bit more to it? And I would say yes, because Solomon makes a great case in the first seven verses of the book of Proverbs. He begins by telling us that we need to trust in God for it. If we go to the very end of this proverb, verse 7, the first way in which we can cultivate an environment in which wisdom can grow is to trust in God. Because he writes, verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Some translations say wisdom. So God asks Solomon, what do you want? Solomon says, living from a place of trust, I would like wisdom, and God gives it to him. I am convinced that the gospel is good news for humanity. And yet so many people have encountered and live in empty religiosity because we have misapplied and ignored a simple word, a word that is found all over the New Testament. In the Greek language, this word is pistis. It's spelled P-I-S-T-I-S. The English translation of this word is either faith or belief. When we use the word faith or belief, we are often referring to something that we consider real or true. The problem with defining it that way is you can believe something to be real or true, and it have no impact on your life whatsoever. For instance, I believe deeply that eating large amounts of sugar is really bad for you. I know that because my wife is on a strict diet. I have friends who are in the medical community that tell me my sugar is terrible for you. I have friends that are health people that explain to me the horrible effects of sugar on the body. And yet, I promise you that will not stop me tonight from eating whatever gigantic dessert they're going to serve at the banquet and then probably washing it down with some ice cream for second dessert like a hobbit. Why? Because I believe that sugar is bad for me. I know it's true. I've done the research. I've seen the damaging effects of sugar, and yet it does nothing. That belief does nothing to change my behavior. We can say, I believe I have faith in God and really not affect my life at all. That's why I believe the context of the word pistis or belief or faith is so much broader than that, because it actually means to have confidence in, to be loyal to, or to trust in. See, when I place my confidence in something, when I trust in something, when I am loyal to something, it actually affects the way that I live my life. So for me, as a person of faith, wisdom begins when I place my trust, my confidence in God, and when I fear him with reverence and awe. I also can create an environment for wisdom to grow through the experiences that I live in my life. Verse 4 of Proverbs chapter 1. Wisdom is for giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. The first half of Proverbs is written in such a way as a father giving advice to a son. We all have these experiences, every single one of us. It's called living. Anybody here alive? Anybody's heart beating? If the answer is yes, then you are currently having experiences. You're going to walk out of this room and you're going to have an experience. You're having an experience right now. All of us have lived. This is why I believe that, generally speaking, older people are wiser than younger people simply because they've lived, they've experienced, they've seen it. It's why I enjoy talking to older people. When I pastored in Colorado, I had three friends. My three friends were all in their 80s, and every Tuesday morning, we would meet at Starbucks and we would just talk. And these guys would talk to me about the war. They would talk to me about their health. They would talk to me about their doctor visits, which was every single day, it seemed like. But I met with these guys, and they But they talked about things. They talked about life. They talked about service. They talked about loyalty in ways that I never heard. And I went back every single Tuesday to sit with these guys, first because they paid for my coffee every single time, but because these men oozed wisdom. And when one of them died, and I was brought back to do his funeral, and it was such an honor to perform the funeral of a man who invested in me and did not know it simply because he started talking and was sharing his life experiences. So I wonder, what is it that we will do with our living? Because the difference between someone who is growing in wisdom and someone who is not is a very simple question. And the simple question is, what can I learn from this? In every experience, the good or the bad, what can I learn from this? So when things are going well, when life is incredible, instead of thinking, how awesome am I and how awesome is life right now, what if we also asked, but what is it that I'm learning right now? And when things are not going well, when you fail, instead of beating yourself up, asking the question, what is it that I'm learning? Because the key to wisdom is not just living, but learning from our experiences. Third, and I can create an environment for wisdom to grow within the relationships that I develop. I want to skip ahead a few pages to Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20. In the New Living Translation, the writer writes, "Walk with the wise and become wise. Associate with fools and get into trouble." When I was a kid, a lot of the trouble that I got into was directly associated with the people that I chose to hang out with. There are stories that circulate amongst my family from my childhood years. If you were to walk up to my parents today, which you can actually test me on this because they're here, and ask them what they call the years between about 12 and 16, they will tell you, oh, those are the dark years of my childhood. There's one particular story from my dark years that makes an appearance every time I seem to be in the vicinity of the Michigan border, and it's this. I had a sleepover with one of my friends, the friend that stood up to the bully for me that I mentioned the other day, and we were in junior high, and we had no parental supervision. There is a bad combination that happens when you take a couple of junior high boys with no parental supervision at an all-night sleepover with nothing to do. And so my friend said to me, "What do you think would happen if we dumped a few gallons of gas down the road and lit it on fire?" And I said, "I don't know. Why don't we try it?" And so we did. In the middle of the night, we took a 5-gallon drum of gasoline, dumped it down the middle of our road, and lit it on fire. There were some people that decision was not popular with, including the local law enforcement. It was a bad decision. And so again, I ask the question, who is it that you're spending time with? Because if you walk with the wise, you'll become wise. But if you walk with fools, you will get into trouble. We become like those that we associate with. Many people will tell you that if you want to lose weight, don't spend time with people who are not trying to lose weight, because you won't. If you want to get into shape, spend time with people who exercise. If you want to gain wisdom through reading, spend time with people who like to read. So I wonder, who is it that you're spending time with, and who, more importantly, who are you allowing to speak into your life? Because who you allow speak into your life will have incredible impact on you. And finally, number four, I grow wise when I learn to see things differently. Verse 5. Of Proverbs chapter 1. "Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance." There's an academic term. It's the term framing. Framing is a concept that has been developed to describe the way that we see something, conceptualize something, or visualize something, like a problem. Reframing is the ability to see things from different angles and different perspectives. Stephen Kostlin, who is the department head of psychology at Harvard University, said, "People who are wise can interrupt, take a step back and reframe. A lot of wisdom probably has to do with looking at a situation differently and reframing it. See, I believe there are wise ways to live and foolish ways to win. Wise people seek instruction. Wise people desire to see things differently, but fools despise all of those things. I believe that wise people, like King Solomon, have this ability to view things from different angles and different perspectives, even if they disagree with the premise, without compromising on their convictions. Wise people can see the perspective and yet still hold true to what they believe. So, for instance, when my reaction to someone who disagrees with me is, well, they're just a bunch of idiots. You ever said that or heard that? Those conservatives, they're a bunch of idiots. Those liberals, they're a bunch of idiots. Those NRA members, they're a bunch of idiots. Those advocating for gun control, they're a bunch of idiots. Those Christians, they're a bunch of idiots. Those atheists, they're all a bunch of idiots. Every one of those statements is a foolish reaction, not a wise response. Because a wise person can reframe anything. A wise person can say, this is what I believe. This is why I believe it. This is where I stand. This is my conviction. And at the same time, but I know you disagree with me. Help me to understand why you believe what you believe. Because I'm convinced every belief has a story attached to it. Years and years ago, when I first came to Northbrook Church, I spent some time observing our church, our culture, and as every new pastor will tell you, when they come into a church, they observe and decide that there are probably some changes that need to be made, and they start to make changes. But one of the changes that I made years and years ago at Northbrook Church was a change in the music. And when I changed the music, I received some feedback. Because whenever you change the music in any church of any denomination, there will always be feedback. So I received some feedback in the form of a letter about the music that was changed. And when I read it, the letter was, whatever the opposite of kind is, that's what this letter was. Now, this person had the guts to sign it. So if you write your pastor a letter, always sign it, because if you don't, that's cowardly. Just saying. So this person signed the letter. And at first I was mad. My initial reaction was to say, this person is crazy. None of that's true. This person's an idiot. This is insane. But instead I took a step back, tried to reframe, took a deep breath, and I called them. Because if someone ever writes me a letter with an opinion and they sign it and put their phone number, I always call them, every single person. So I called them and I said, hey, maybe you and me should do lunch. And they said, okay. So we went, sat down for lunch and began some small talk. And eventually I got to the point where I said, tell me about this letter. And so he began to talk and talk and talk and talk. And as we talked for several hours, what I discovered was that the issue wasn't really the issue. The issue was, before I'd even come, there was a big change in the music program years ago, and he was still upset about how that went down. So the real issue wasn't really me, per se, and what I did, but the issue was something that he'd been holding on to for years because no one would listen to him. And in the end, he said, Mike, I'm just so upset because no one will ever listen to me. And so I went back, and I reframed it, and I had a conversation with this guy, and as a result, this guy and I became friends. This man and I developed a long relationship, and when he passed, right before he passed, he requested that I do his funeral, which I did. And a friendship developed because I was able to see things differently. Now, the truth is, we did not see eye to eye on everything. There were some things about what I did that he still didn't per se like, but he was at the point where he was able to admit, yeah, Mike, it's a preference, and I'm willing to accept it. But him and I began a friendship because we were simply able to view things differently. I think we live in a world that could use some really, really wise people. I think we live in a world that desperately needs people who are full of the wisdom of Christ, not just full of intelligence, not just full of wisdom, but full of God's wisdom, full of God's discernment, this gift that was given to Solomon. And so my prayer for you is that you would ask God for it, that you would trust God in it, that you would learn from your experiences and not just live life, that you would spend time with wise people, and that you would learn to see the world from different angles, appreciating the beauty of the diversity that exists around us. And so my prayer for you as we go today is that you would grow in grace, but also grow in wisdom. So gracious God, this morning, as we consider this text and tuck Proverbs chapter 1 into our hearts, I'm asking for wisdom. The world doesn't need any more reactors who respond from emotionalism. What your world really needs, why, is some wise people right now who are filled with the wisdom that comes deeply from the heart of God. And so would you help us? Help us to trust you. Help us to learn from every experience that we encounter. May we spend time with some really, really wise people. And would you help us to learn to see things differently? God, we're asking for wisdom. In the great name of Christ, I pray. Amen. Amen. Amen.